This week, we've been exploring the challenges the region experiences in ensuring a supply of clean water to its citizens. Project Milwaukee, Great Lakes Troubled Waters, has been asking the fundamental question of why. With so much of the world's fresh water right next to us, why is water access such an issue?
Experts say one of the ways forward is through a more comprehensive water management plan for the region and beyond. And they point to places around the world that have put plans into place that have yielded positive results. Jenny Kale is an associate professor in the School of Freshwater Sciences and Global Water Security Scholar at UW-Milwaukee, and she joins me and environmental reporter Susan Bentz in the studio. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So let me ask you, what do you think good water management plans have in common?
I think good water management plans have an emphasis on conservation and not consumption, which sounds obvious. But I think one of the things that we often look at is how to market our region as a water-rich region, which it is. But I want to make sure that a water stewardship plan in this region really looks at conservation as the priority, as opposed to selling our water or bringing in water-intensive industries to this area specifically to take advantage of our water, as opposed to attracting water businesses and water-intensive industries and agriculture as a function of our water responsibility and our stewardship, and maybe some reputational benefits to those companies of locating here and being part of a responsible water management plan, again, as opposed to having it be more of an extractive exercise.
There are some cities, some metropolitan areas people typically point to as places that have taken a proactive approach in these areas and are generally doing it right when it comes to managing their water supply and distribution. I was going to name names, but I guess I'm curious to have you name names. When you look around in this field as you do, what do you look to as the places that have gotten it right?
In addition to Milwaukee, of course, we have a lot of great expertise and leadership in this region. But I think, it's too parochial to say that we can't learn from other amazing cities in the nation and worldwide that are doing good work. Philadelphia has a particularly strong stormwater management plan, one of the most forward-thinking in the country.
And how so?
They can capture more than the first inch of stormwater in the city. And, it's a large urban area, very densely populated, and they've done a remarkable job at building in ways to capture stormwater. Green space.
The first inch is typically how much you would expect? They can capture the more than the first inch, but
right. And so Milwaukee, for example, is aspiring to capture the first half inch.
Oh, wow.
Right. So Philadelphia is doing really quite well in that area. New York, as you know, is managing its drinking water very effectively by managing natural areas as opposed to destroying those natural areas and then having to put in a $6 billion water management system. Stockholm's doing a great job managing, in particular, its garbage waste and its stormwater runoff that contaminates the water. So it's doing a really good job looking at all of the factors that contribute to water pollution and keeping its water clean in that way. So there are definitely some remarkable examples that we can look to.
So are there cities that fold the two together, the drinking end and then through that stormwater and processing? Because that's something that I think people here in Milwaukee are talking about. Can we establish that kind of big comprehensive program?
I would look to Stockholm right now as the model city worldwide in doing that.
We should.
It is a good place. And it does have a much more integrated approach. I think it does, really look at food and food waste as well as production of material goods, plastics in particular. It looks at its recycling programs. It looks at its housing projects. It looks at stormwater management in terms of what's running off of its streets. It looks at green spaces and infrastructure. And it looks at all of that as a function of the effects on drinking water, which usually we look at the front end of drinking water. Where's the water coming from as opposed to the back end, which is, where's the wastewater going and how do we treat it before it gets back into the system and then, again, turns into drinking water later. But they've done a really good job at integrating all of those contributing factors. It's important for us here because we get our drinking water from Lake Michigan, and so we do pay attention to, what is going into the rivers that contribute to the lake and what the quality of that water system as a whole is. So I think we've done a pretty good job at considering that here. But I think we definitely need to increase the priority of that conversation.
Well, and you mentioned New York and its ability to kind of manage the natural areas so that they have them and don't have to replace them with a prohibitively expensive system.
Right.
What is New York doing to kind of hang on to those spaces so that they serve the natural functions that they do in terms of ensuring that the drinking water supply is safe?
I'm glad you mentioned that it's prohibitively expensive to put in a new built system to treat that water. Because I'd like to think that, it's environmental ethics and humanistic effort to keep that environment clean. But, from a policy perspective, it really does have a very strong economic component that compels decision makers to try to maintain that system. So I think, of course, they have to have all of those components, the environmental component, the ethical component of conservation. But it also does have to have the economic component to compel policymakers often. And I think, part of the economic impetus for maintaining that natural environment keeps businesses out of range, right, or keeps businesses in a sustainable framework. And I think that's hard to do in a major urban area. But really what they're doing is they're keeping the toxic pollution out of the system before it reaches the system, because, as you know, it's technically possible but very difficult to get those toxins out of the water once it's in the system, and they recognize that. And it's cost prohibitive to get it out of the system once it's in the system. So they've recognized the interdependence of the environment and the economy, and they've actually recognized that it's more cost effective for them to keep those water intensive and water polluting businesses quite a distance away. And they've had them invest in other areas, right? And they have paid somewhat of an economic cost for that, but they recognize the financial trade-off in the long run is worth it. Now, I would say, the priorities are changing, and that there is even a stronger environmental ethic that is driving that, as opposed to solely an economic benefit, because I think there's much more of a reputational gain for New York than there was in the past. Because now, as is Milwaukee, a lot of cities are looking to New York to figure out how are they doing it? Where are they putting the businesses? Where are they putting the polluters? How are they keeping the toxins out of the system in the first place, and why? And I think they appreciate being turned to as a model for replication.
Do you think places like New York and Philadelphia, are they able to act regionally in a way that is challenging to this area?
That's a good question. I hadn't thought about it that way. Regionally in terms of the density of population or the interconnectedness of cities, the relationship between New York and Philadelphia as opposed to Milwaukee and Chicago.
Well, I mean, the relationship between New York and its surrounding communities, the relationship between Philadelphia and its suburbs. I mean, I think when we look at the situation in Milwaukee, I think a lot of people point to the fact that you have, sort of competing priorities. When you look, within the city of Milwaukee, it's dealing with one set of issues. And when you go not very far away to the other side of the Sunny Slope Road, it's a whole different set of issues. And when you go to the south, it's a whole different set of issues. And so I'm wondering if there's something more unifying about what they deal with in a place like New York or Philadelphia versus, the kind of microclimates that we have, probably to mix a metaphor here, an environmental metaphor, in the Milwaukee area.
Yes, I would agree with that characterization. I think it would hold to be more similar to Milwaukee on a larger scale. So urban Philadelphia has much more in common with urban Milwaukee than it does with rural Pennsylvania. And the same with New York, right? Upstate New York or rural New York has a lot less in common with urban New York than New York City has with the metropolitan area. But because of the function of those being cities and metropolitan areas of many millions of people and, many, many miles of densely populated areas, I think there is a solidarity in those areas and an understanding of interdependence that isn't broken for many miles outside of the city. And there's a common understanding of the interdependence of where the water comes from and what pollutes it. And that is helpful. And I do think it's that sense of city solidarity that really does spark a lot of that innovation and the kind of collective understanding of their fate, essentially. I don't mean to be too dramatic about it, but that's essentially what it is. And I think, as you mentioned, southern Wisconsin in particular has some of the greatest wealth of the state. It has some of the greatest urban elements and assets of the state. It also has some of the most remote rural areas. It also has some of the most deeply impoverished urban areas, as well as some of the most deeply impoverished rural areas. It's got such a wide set of stakeholders. It's got some of the most influential people. It's got some of the most vulnerable people. It's got some of the best water systems in the state. It's got some of the worst water problems in the state. And so, it's definitely got some challenges in terms of identifying where our shared priorities are and where our shared challenges and our shared opportunities are.
So what do you think the potentials are here? I mean, where does Milwaukee stand in your estimation, and how do we move forward toward a plan?
Well, I think we're fortunate in three respects. We have a lot of expertise here. We have some good water leadership in the area. And I believe we have a genuine commitment to the issues of water stewardship. And I'm thankful for that because some cities don't have that. They haven't prioritized it or gotten it high enough on the political agenda yet. And I think Milwaukee is certainly moving it high enough on the political agenda to have a real impact. I think some of the best areas of opportunity are in green infrastructure because we have some of the policies in place to advance it and incentivize it. I think in terms of creating blue-green jobs and some of the industries here and some of the businesses that are coming together to create places where our water experts and our water leaders can stay in Wisconsin and lead and develop here as opposed to having to go to other places is a real advantage. To keep those minds here is a real asset to the state as well. I think we have some creative thinkers. I think we have some people who are trying to understand where the real water inefficiencies are and the real inequities are. And I think that's a good first step. I think a lot of people misidentify where the real water problems actually are. And I think we're overcoming that step by step in Milwaukee. So, for example, residential use is only 10% of water use and consumption. So it's important that we have water efficient appliances and that we not water our lawns in the middle of the day. And I think it's great that a lot of residents in both urban and rural areas are taking personal responsibility for that. However, I think there's a really important recognition, particularly in an agriculture-intensive state, that 70% of the water used in the state for human consumption is in the agricultural sector. And that affects Milwaukee because we eat that food. I enjoy it every day. And I'm dependent on it, as are most people in urban areas, right? And the inefficiencies in that agricultural sector affect the lake from which we get our drinking water in the city, and it affects our water ethic and our water responsibilities in the urban areas because we rely very heavily on that food as well. So I think understanding that interdependence is something that Milwaukeeans are getting much better at.
Do you think it's too much to ask to have a water management plan that brings in the stakeholders from both Milwaukee but also from far-flung places mm-hmm. in Wisconsin where agriculture is really running the show when it comes to water use?
No, I think it's imperative. I mean, water obviously crosses political boundaries. It crosses jurisdictions. It crosses economic interests. And so in order to have a comprehensive water plan or to put a water policy in place that's going to be effective, you have to include all of those stakeholders, the most influential stakeholders, the most urban stakeholders, the most vulnerable stakeholders, the most rural stakeholders. The agricultural sector is powerful in Wisconsin, but it's also very expensive to be a farmer, right? And a lot of people are leaving the business in Wisconsin right now. And we want to support people who want to feed people. And that's really where the nobility of that profession comes from. And we want to make sure they can survive here. And I've found that including people in the agricultural sector really does break some of the preconceived notions that they want to put chemical pesticides and fertilizers on their properties, for example. They're dependent on that soil for their livelihoods as well. And so I think opening that conversation to a variety of stakeholders really is essential in terms of understanding what's necessary and what's feasible in the state.
Is this, I mean, if we're talking here at home where we're sitting mm-hmm. very close to Lake Michigan, are we talking about a watershed-based water management plan or mm-hmm. is it broader than that?
I think we need to have a watershed management plan for every watershed, and I think we need to have a statewide water policy in place. I also think we need to have a national water policy in the same way we need to have an energy policy so that we know what the directives are, what our values are, what it is our aspirations are as a country. But at the state level, I think it's really important for Wisconsinites to understand we have a very strong environmental history in the state. We've got Aldo Leopold. We've got a lot of very strong environmentalists, a lot of good current water scholars. We've got Gaylord Nelson, who started Earth Day, and it was very involved, right, in trying to understand the interconnectedness of environmental and economic issues. So I think we need to hearken back to some of those traditional values in the state of Wisconsin and make sure that we are developing a statewide water policy to direct us into the future. It's not a partisan politics kind of issue. Everybody drinks water. Everybody eats food. Everybody, wants or I anticipate that everybody wants, the future generations of Wisconsin to be able to survive. that's not too dramatic, right? There are some pretty serious challenges that we're facing. I think everyone wants us to be able to address uncertainties and vulnerabilities. And I think people would appreciate some deliberate thought and direction in that area. And so I think a statewide water policy is called for. But to add some specifics to that, we would need watershed policies in place, right, or watershed plans in place that address the specifics of each region. And that can only really be done if we do cross those political jurisdictions and those boundaries and those economic interests particular to those regions.
So in the other cities that you talked about, has it been business leaders or water leaders or, who have spearheaded these activities in other places?
It has been a combination of business leaders, certainly a strong solidarity between the non-governmental organizations of all kinds, any organization that is obviously a water-related organization, but other organizations that have a water component of any kind, green infrastructure organizations, urban agriculture organizations, equity organizations, economic development organizations, those kinds of organizations, environmental justice organizations, public health organizations, all have a stake in what happens with the water and sustainable development in cities and the surrounding areas. I also think that the universities in a lot of areas have led in research. They have nonpartisan research that they can conduct and hopefully contribute, especially public universities in particular. They have a role in serving their community and their states, and I think they've done in most areas, a pretty good job of contributing to that conversation and pushing it forward. And I think between those three pillars, between, you know, the service organizations, the universities, and the business organizations, I think anywhere that you can build on those three pillars together, you've got a pretty solid group of leaders you can count on to move things forward pretty quickly.
So I'm assuming a city like New York has taken into account infrastructure and existing and what needs to be replaced and how it has to be visioned for the future. Is that right?
Yes. And unfortunately, some natural disasters have changed some of the modeling for cities, New York included. So
you're talking about the flooding they had.
Right. The flooding that they've had. And it's an unfortunate way to improve those models. But, when the subways flood, they can figure out where that water's actually going to go. And so there's been improvements through some of those natural disasters and the future modeling to build resilience in a variety of new ways. And, you know, just trying to bring home the realities of the uncertainties that we face. One of the important challenges there is how do we make policy decisions in the context of those uncertainties? And that's one area in which that set of three pillars is really important: universities, businesses, non-governmental organizations, and then, of course, the municipalities. And the political leadership in those municipalities has to participate, because they have to understand as best they can the uncertainties and find ways to make decisions in the context of those uncertainties. And that's something that we're not particularly good at doing yet.
Jenny Kale, thank you so much for your perspective on this. It's been really illuminating.
Thank you for doing the series. I appreciate it.
Jenny Kale is an associate professor in the School of Freshwater Sciences and Global Water Security Scholar at UW-Milwaukee.